Hello, you are listening to the Audio Information Network of Colorado. The following recording is intended solely for the use of blind, visually impaired, and print format disabled individuals. Thank you for joining us for the Gilpin County News. My name is Larry Eckstein. I'll be reading from this weekly register call with some articles posted in the last few weeks. Central City and Blackhawks Iron Horse is the cover story for the October 14th issue. Revered and Remembered, CCRR by JW. The Colorado Central Railroad ran between the state of Colorado and Wyoming in the late 1800s. It was created to ship the gold that was produced from the mountain cities of what is now Gilpin County, Colorado. It was expanded from its original Golden to Denver line to form a crucial link connecting Colorado with the Transcontinental Railroad and the National Railroad Network. The history of the railroad in the 1870s was rife with struggle and legal battles between several powerful locals, which were led by W.A.H. Loveland, against the investors of the Union Pacific Railroad, led by Jay Gould. The early struggle of the Colorado Central Railroad to build its rail lines was a major part of the fierce competition between Denver, Golden, and Central City, and their quest to become the seat of power in the Colorado Territory. Colorado Central Railroad built the very first rail lines connecting the mining communities of Blackhawk, Central City, and Idaho Springs. Through a series of reorganizations and acquisitions over many years, it eventually became part of the Colorado and Southern Railway. Its smaller 3-foot narrow gauge mountain lines were dismantled in the mid-20th century. A portion of its rail line still survives today as active lines of BNSF railway system. BNSF is the largest freight railroad network operating in America. It's nice to know that part of it survives and is still operating, still in operation today, continuing to provide supplies to America. This is a true testament to the vision of many men full of hopes and dreams of a better future for the territory of Colorado. Parenthetically, there's no note of what BNSF stands for. Colorado and Clear Creek Railroad Company was founded on February 9, 1865 by W.A.H. Loveland and a group of local investors in Golden. At that time, Golden was the capital of the territory of Colorado. Loveland and his partners had the vision and desire to build a 4-foot by 8.5 standard gauge railroad up the mountains and through Clear Creek Canyon to Blackhawk, Central City, and the other mining cities, and then to connect to the nearby cities of Denver and Boulder. In January of 1866, the name of the railroad was changed to the Colorado Central and Pacific Railroad. In June of 1867, the company was reorganized and the Union Pacific investors took control. But they provided no funds for the construction of the railroad. Also that year, the seat of government in Colorado was moved from Golden to Denver. On January 1, 1868, construction began on the first line connecting Denver to Golden. The company then changed the name to the Colorado Central Railroad. Construction was very slow, going only a small portion, less than 12 miles, between Denver and Golden had been graded in the first year. The former governor of the territory, John Evans, and other businessmen from the Denver area, including William Byers of the Rocky Mountain News, David Moffett, Joseph E. Bates, Bella Hughes, Walter Cheeseman, and Luther Kuntz of the Colorado National Bank formed the Denver Pacific Railway on November 19, 1867, with the intention of building a railroad line from Denver to Cheyenne. The formation of the Denver Pacific Railway and Telegraph Company set off a heated battle over the next 2 years between the two companies to complete their lines connecting to Union Pacific. The next year, the Denver Pacific Railway and its investors successfully persuaded Congress to grant them land, which allowed them to construct a line through the South Platte River Valley to Cheyenne, which made it evident that Denver would prevail over Golden. The Denver Pacific line was completed in June of 1870, and the first train arrived at Denver Depot from Cheyenne, bypassing the city of Golden completely. 2 months later, the Kansas Pacific Railroad completed its line to the city of Denver, linking up with the Denver Pacific Railway and cementing the role of Denver as the center of Colorado. Because of this, the Colorado Central Railroad then turned its attention toward connecting up with the Denver Pacific and Kansas Pacific lines. On September 24, 1870, the company achieved its first real success with the completion of the rail line from Golden City to Jersey Junction, that's in quotes, the main junction of the Kansas Pacific and Denver Pacific lines, located just 3 miles north of Denver. In May 1871, the local investors again regained control of the railroad from Union Pacific and outside investors. By September, 150 men were hard at work in the high mountains just west of Golden to extend the line to the mining cities up there. In 1872, the company acquired a critical right-of-way along Clear Creek to extend its line west of Golden. The line was built with 3-foot narrow gauge. In August of that year, the company took delivery of its first two locomotive engines, the General Sheridan number one, and the General Sherman number two. In September 1872, the track was completed 13.3 miles to Forks Creek. By mid-December, the line had been extended 7.7 miles further to Black Hawk. By February of 1873, a second line from Forks Creek had been extended 3.3 miles to Floyd Hill. The battle for control of the Colorado Central Railroad went back and forth for many years between Loveland, his local investors, the outside interests of Jay Gould, this is in parentheses, a notorious robber baron and railroad magnate, close parentheses, and other Union Pacific investors who had placed a large financial stake in the railroad. Still, the Colorado Central Railroad was in control of Loveland. Then the devastating financial collapse of 1873 hit, practically halting all construction and instigating a period of difficult legal battles for control of the nearly bankrupt Colorado Central Railroad. In 1875, during the midst of the Depression, the Union Pacific Railroad and the outside investors controlled 3/4 of the Colorado Central Railroad Company's stock. At a company board meeting in April of that year, that was 1875, Union Pacific proxies voted to lease the company to the Kansas Pacific Railroad. The following month, the company board of directors repudiated this agreement by voiding all the votes of the Union Pacific proxies on a technicality. The board then reestablished Loveland as president of the Colorado Central Railroad Company. On May 21, 1876, Loveland's forces seized physical control of assets of the Kansas Pacific Railroad. In retaliation for this move, the Union Pacific Railroad sued the Colorado Central Railroad, thereby forcing it to go into receivership. During the time Loveland fought to keep control of the Colorado Central Railroad through multiple court hearings and proceedings. Finally, in February of 1877, the Union Pacific relinquished control to Loveland once again. In 1877, with Loveland once again in control of the Colorado Central Railroad, and with the National Depression receding, the Colorado Central began to grow and expand its lines once again. Loveland's strength and perseverance finally paid off, and they were then able to construct a direct rail line from Golden via Boulder and Fort Collins to Cheyenne. After the completion of the rail line, the new city of Loveland was founded along the line. The Loveland Pass in the Rockies, just west of Golden, is named in his honor. Stay posted for a continuation of this story in the Weekly Register Call. And there are two photos with this, actually. One is a stereoscopic photo of the central line, and the other is of an engine from the line. Barbed Wire Bob. Barbed Wire Bob. Iron Horses, revered and remembered. Iron Horse is a fabulous cover on this week's historic paper, founded even before the Colorado became a state in 1876. I've been told that the first state constitution was written in the parlor of the Central City Register Call building that now is the home of the Masonic Lodge, one of the oldest of the three lodges in Central City, Blackhawk, and Nevadaville. The history of the Iron Horse led the massive growth of the Queen City of the Plains, commonly referred to as Denver. The Union Pacific Railroad had to go north to Cheyenne because of the vast Rocky Mountains west of Denver, but that didn't stop David Moffett and his railroad tunnel leading to western Colorado. The early day railroad barons laid the narrow gauge tracks in the mining towns to haul out the tons of gold and silver ore. Much of the ore was hauled to mill presses in Golden, once the brief capital of Colorado, behind proposed Central City and Leadville. The outstanding railroad museum now resides near Golden, awaiting your visit. The WRC newspaper historian, that's the Weekly Register Call, WRC, Forrest Whitman can relate the growth of the railroad industry in future columns. To this day, railroads have been the pillar of our nation's industrial strength, with the ability to haul carloads of coal to thirsty electric power plants for our electricity and to haul lumber and bricks to build homes and buildings. The rails today haul wheat and corn from rich Iowa farmlands to the food mills and later to our grocery shelves. Coal is fast disappearing, soon to be replaced by solar and wind. What will happen when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow? Woe unto us as the demand for electricity grows for vehicles and diminishes with the disappearance of these coal-fired power plants and the disappearance of a once-thriving coal mining industry. I was mayor of Craig. This is again by, I believe, Bob Sweeney, the new publisher. Barb Wire Bob. Again, I was mayor of Craig when we landed the first of our four coal-generated power plants that produce massive amounts of electricity to Denver, Arizona, and beyond, with a vast power grid system. The coal plants allowed high school graduates to find great local good-paying jobs, buy homes, and raise families. We need to support industries that pay major county taxes, provide hundreds of jobs, and keep our free enterprise system alive and profitable. We cannot all stay home and collect unemployment checks. American immigrants that came to this area to break their backs with hard physical labor, many dying young, paving the way for the financial development of this state and the growth and success of our mining towns, leading to Denver as the final state capital. The majority of early Denver mansions came from the wealth of the mining industry. The famous Broadmoor Hotel in Colorado Springs came from the wealth of the Cripple Creek gold. The collapse of silver in the last century led to a downturn in the mining industry, never to fully recover. Add to that the end of the gold backing our currency and the Roosevelt administration ending the private ownership of gold coins in the 1930s. A $10,000 fine and jail time was had if one owned gold coins. We have a very successful local aggregate industry with the Albert Fry and Sons quarry operation supplying vital varieties of rock to many eastern slope construction sites where homes and apartments are under construction. This aggregate is badly needed for the shortage of affordable housing for the Front Range growth. This newspaper was founded among mining towns in 1862, and we're still supporting the industry in 2021. Long may a free press and free enterprise system reign in blessed freedom to provide information, transparency in government, and jobs and taxes for our cities. The future of our country resides in a well-funded educational system that receives the majority of our taxation dollars. God bless America and the early day pioneers who led the way. The realization of the American dream. Albert Frey and Sons and the Rock They Have Mined by Danny Tomlinson. Editor's note, part one of a multi-part series discussing hard work, honesty, vision, and the entrepreneurial spirit. The story of Alfred Frey and Sons, AFS, begins in the early part of the last century when Albert F., or Fritz, and Rinalda Mary Heer Frey immigrated to the United States from their native Switzerland. They settled on a small vegetable farm near Henderson, Colorado, and began farming and raising their family. In May of 1949, Albert Raymond Frey, Sr. was born. He and his life will be the focus of the early history of Albert Frey and Sons. Fritz and Rinalda had two other children as well, Fred, who now lives in Newcastle, Colorado, and Mary Jo, who passed in 2006. This story will show how AFS, that is Alfred Frey and Sons, continues the rich mining heritage of Clear Creek County and the importance of mining in each of us in our daily to each of us in our daily lives. As a message to us all, it will show the importance of honesty, hard work, and a never-ending faith in the future. Fritz and Rinalda were in search of the American dream. When they came to America, they wanted a better life for themselves and their yet-to-be-born children. Europe was in turmoil with World War II looming on the horizon, and they were confident about their new lives in America. Their small farm was successful because of the hard work of their family. Albert Raymond Frey, or Al Sr., worked on his parents' farm from the time he was a youngster. He attended Assumption Church School and later graduated from Denver's Mount Carmel Catholic High School in 1967. He attended Mesa State College, now Colorado Mesa University, in Grand Junction, Colorado, for 1 year following his high school graduation. The family was not wealthy, and Al would hitchhike between Henderson and Grand Junction each weekend in order to be able to help his dad on the weekends. When Fritz's children reached the adolescent years, he decided that the gravel under the farm along the South Platte River was potentially more profitable than the annual vegetable crop growing above the ground. The original farm was located at about 88th Avenue and Interstate 76 in Adams County. The river bottom was approximately 75% rock and 25% sand, ideal for a gravel pit. Al Sr. incorporated in 1962, and the sand and gravel operation began. In the early 1970s, Al Sr. and brother Fred took over the sand and gravel business. In 1975, when the gravel was depleted at the original home location, AFS, that's again Alfred Frey and Sons, bought a larger farm about 7 miles north at about 112th Avenue and U.S. Highway 85. This is pit number 2 and has been reclaimed into a water storage reservoir since then. Later that same year, he married Mary Jane Wellner, and they started their family. In 1976, Albert Raymond Frey Jr. was born, followed by brothers Ben in 1977, Joe in 1980, and a sister Lisa in 1982, and a brother Tommy in 1983. All of the children continue to work in the Albert Frey and Sons Company. We'll be spotlighting the siblings in a future segment. In the 1970s and early 1980s, the alluvial gravel deposits along the Front Range were being rapidly depleted with all of the new construction, roads and highways, homes, shopping areas, and other developments, as well as the gravel. As the gravel requirements for most construction projects were becoming more reliant on hard rock gravel. This meant that new and more productive quarries had to be created and operated to facilitate the growth of Colorado. The Martin Marietta Specifications Quarry had been the last to be permitted to build the Chatfield Reservoir as a flood control project. It is located just west of Golden near the old Magic Mountain Park. Al watched with interest as five separate new quarry proposals were rejected in Jefferson and Boulder counties. He decided to attempt to build his quarry in Clear Creek County, just one county to the west. In 1982, after studying the USGS maps and courthouse records, Al contacted Violet Wallstrom, a widow living in California and the owner of 100 acres at the junction of U.S. Highway 6 and Interstate 70. Al was successful in securing an option to buy vacant land from Mrs. Wallstrom and then obtaining the necessary permits from Clear Creek County. The rest is history, as the saying goes. And apparently this was going to be part one, and part two was the next week's issue. There is a photo of Fritz and Mary with sons Al Sr., Fred, and daughter Mary Jo in this, as well as another picture, Al and brother Fred in front of a loader at pit number two in Adams County. And I'll read part of an article somewhat related. High on Marshall Pass, a favorite drive in these parts on a bluebird day, by Forrest Whitman. And there is a photo from two photos, one from 1899, Marshall Pass and Mount Ouray, photo by Detroit Photographic Company. It's mountains in the background and hills with some trees in the foreground, and another one from 1898, rounding the curves on Marshall Pass, Colorado on rail line D and R, GRR, photo courtesy of B.L. Singley, and this is another stereoscopic photo. Nothing lifts the spirits like a car trip over a pass. Marshall Pass is one of the favorites for many in Colorado. The best route begins at U.S. Highway 50 near Poncha Pass. It's always a spectacular drive up and over Marshall Pass to Sargent. It is 10,864 feet high and offers moderate grades and spectacular scenery the whole way. We went on a, quote, bluebird day. There was not a cloud in the sky, and many aspen groves were in their brightest gold. The cottonwoods were changing too, and those rare streaks of bright red aspen were showing off. And then it goes on, a pass full of Colorado history. Marshall Pass is a deep part of Colorado history. General William Jackson Palmer used it to build his, quote, Colorado Railroad. A narrow 3-foot gauge was his choice for the line. 3 foot could get up into the mountains, while a standard gauge, 5'8¾", often could not. He saw the road as reaching the mineral resources of the mountains and shipping them down to the bigger gauge. His Denver and Rio Grande, that is D and RG, ran for many years, always as a narrow gauge route. This is the Audio Information Network of Colorado. Thank you for joining us for the Gilpin County News. My name is Larry Eckstein. We invite you to please stay tuned for the next program.